I remember one time I was visiting New York City with my family, and we came upon this group of street performers. They were doing some incredible acrobatics just out there in the middle of Manhattan. I mean, it was mesmerizing. Their performance lasted maybe 10 minutes, and by the time they finished, they had a huge crowd around, and people were clapping and cheering and just lining up to give them money as an appreciation for the performance. Well, what could you do if you could attract that same kind of positive attention? If you could fascinate people so much that they just stopped everything they were doing in order to pay attention to what you had to say, wouldn't that be incredible? Well, today's guest is going to tell us all about the science of fascination and how you can easily tap into that to enrapture people to grow your brand. And you won't even have to learn Cirque du Soleil style acrobatics to do it. Let's kick it. It's not so good right now.
Welcome to the Scope of Practice podcast, where we help busy healthcare professionals learn to manage their businesses successfully and master their personal finances. Now, here's your host, Dr. Brent Lacey.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for the Scope of Practice podcast, where you can get the knowledge and resources you need to grow your leadership skills, your business, and your personal finances. Welcome to episode 66. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please be sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now, and that way you won't miss out on the exciting episodes that are coming up. Also, don't forget, as always, stay tuned to the end, and this week you're going to get access to a special resource that I am so excited to tell you about. It's going to revolutionize how you connect with your team. I'm excited that we're halfway through the beta launch of my first online course, Residency Proof Your Marriage. This online course is a self-directed 6-week course that will help you build a strong relationship that thrives despite the stress and strain of a medical career. This online video course will coach you through setting expectations, communicating effectively, getting on the same page with your finances, and keeping your relationship thriving during difficult times. Whether you're in medical school, residency, or out in clinical practice, Residency Proof Your Marriage is going to help you build a thriving medical marriage. Now, we'll be launching the final version of the course this fall, so get on the waitlist now, and you'll be the first to get access to this awesome course. This, trust me, guys, this is a very inexpensive and worthwhile investment in your marriage. A weekend marriage retreat is going to cost you upwards of $1,000 between food and registration, lodging, vacation time. But for this course, you'll get all of that great content for a fraction of the cost, and you can complete it on your own time as your schedule allows. So click the link in the podcast description or go to thescopeofpractice.com/marriage course to get on the wait list today. Again, just click the link in the podcast description or go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/marriage course and you can get on the wait list today. For this week's sponsor, I'm excited to introduce one of our good friends, Dr. Erin Wiseman, who is a previous podcast guest, and she's going to tell you all about her podcast, Dr. Me First.
Hey there, this is Dr. Erin Wiseman. I'm a fellow Dr. Podcast Network member, life coach, and mama three. I kick butt, I take names, and I help other high-achieving people do the exact same. And today, I want to invite you over to my podcast, Dr. Me First. It's well over 300 episodes, and each one is filled with inspiration and advice from amazing guests. So grab your wife, your mom, your sister, your best friend, and come tune in as we explore what it means to be a woman in medicine and a woman in this world. Because this podcast is a dose of everything that I needed when I was burned out, exhausted, and ready to quit it all. At the end of the day, I do this to help you feel more connected to yourself and to connect with others. I love to end my show with a kick of encouragement, so here's my favorite tagline. Your life, your calling, your pulse matters. See you over at Dr. Me First.
My guest on the podcast today is Joanne Stadnick. She is the CEO of one of the largest healthcare organizations in Minnesota. In her 35 years of healthcare administration, she has built some incredibly productive, cooperative teams to grow incredibly large businesses. And today she's going to talk about the science of fascination. I first heard about this on a podcast in 2014, and I was enthralled. The research behind this is compelling, let me tell you. And I've used it in multiple hospitals to help my team members engage better with each other and create more dynamic, cooperative, and productive workplace cultures. This stuff is really interesting. And Joanne is a certified expert in this. And she's also going to tell us about a cool tool that I love called the Fascination Advantage, which is a great tool. It's so great, in fact, I've actually bought it for my entire team at multiple businesses that I've worked in. This conversation we're going to have today, it's a really practical discussion, and you can take action on it and have a major impact on your workplace culture and subsequently your business. This is really going to be worth a listen. So here is my conversation with Joanne Stadnick. Hey everyone, I am excited to welcome to the Scope of Practice podcast. My guest this week is Joanne Stadnick. Joanne, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brent. I'm very happy to be here today.
Oh man, I'm excited to have you. So this is a tool that we're going to be talking about today and a concept that was one of the very first that I actually learned about when I first started delving into leadership topics a long time ago. Now I heard Sally Hogshead interviewed on a podcast and just was absolutely fascinated with this science of fascination that she talked about and the subsequent assessment and tools that that she was using. And it's just so interesting. And so now in your capacity as CEO of one of the largest healthcare organizations in Minneapolis, I know that you've got a big team, a large multi-talented team that you've been working with for a long time now. And one of the things that we see when we have a big group of folks like that and a huge team, that you've got to recognize the different talents of each of the team members, because you're not going to have everybody that's going to be strong in every area, but it's like a patchwork quilt, right? I mean, you start weaving in all these different fibers and then it suddenly makes this beautiful design because everybody is standing out in their own unique way. And you've got a lot of expertise in this area, both as a CEO and also as it's a Fascinate certified expert, I believe, right? So tell me about that. Tell me about that last role. What does that actually mean? What does a certified fascination expert do?
Well, a certified expert means that we go down for training and we get training on the test and we actually learn how to use it, implement it. I'm very different in the sense that I'm working full time and using this versus somebody on the outside that consults on it, speaks on it, even though I do the same thing. But I have actually had a living lab for the last 8 years, 9 years now. And I don't even think Sally understands how good this product is because I use it all the time. It gives me that shortcut to success with all of our teams. And it is fabulous how it works. So I'm looking forward to telling you about that today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the research aspect of it that really underpins this whole concept, because you're talking to a group of physicians and dentists and medical professionals right now. And so we're scientists, right? And so we want evidence, right? We want to know, why does this work? Why is this valuable? So can you walk us through the research that Sally and her team did that has led us to all these concepts?
Well, I kind of chuckle because a little bit of a story working for physicians, and I went to my board and I said, I want to become a fascination advisor. And they're like, no. And I'm like, what do you mean no? And they're like, well, you know, they couldn't see like what that was about. And I'm like, okay. But here it was, is I'm working with all these physicians, right? You just said you're scientific based. Well, fascination's kind of a frou-frou word. So I said, do you realize what this does? So I had to go down into the science of this and talking about how the study was done. It's the Kelton report. Over a million people have been tested now, and trying to sit there and tell them how we're going to use it when we work with teams. And then I had to go through and I actually had to test them so that they would actually understand what I was doing. But at first they truly thought that I was drinking some sort of Kool-Aid during our board meetings when I said, let's go to the fascination advantage. But there's a lot of science behind it. And it's very different because everything's psychology based. And so when you hear that something is branding based, you're like, well, what does that mean for me? And I want it to be, you know, legit. There's all these high level Myers-Briggs, StrengthFinders, everything like that out there. And many people go, well, why would this matter? Those are psychology based and that's science. So this is a little bit different. And so you have to be a little bit out there and accept it, but the results are worth it.
Yeah. And I think the thing that was impressive to me, because I've taken some of those other assessments as well. I've done Myers-Briggs years ago now. I think I'm an EFNP, but I can't remember it exactly, something like that. and strengths finders and the DISC assessment. I've done a lot of different ones, and I've never found one that I felt like it really pinned down exactly what I couldn't quite express about my own personality, you know. And the thing I love about this assessment is the way that it focuses on not who you are, but how the world sees you. And that was actually one of Sally's books. It was the first book of Sally's that I read, was How the World Sees You. And it is an absolutely fascinating, dare I say, fascinating concept.
You'll say it a lot. I will tell you that I spent 27 years. So I've been in healthcare about 35 years now. And the first 27 years, I knew I was different, but I didn't know how. So going back to how it pinpointed you in a 10 to 15 minute assessment, I was like, aha, this is it. And this is why I struggled with some people and some other presentations with the board and trying to talk to different people. But now that we brought it into the practice, it's made a big difference. And we understand each other so much better. But for 27 years, I didn't understand how I fit in. And now I do. And actually, I've changed my language based on it, which we'll kind of talk about today.
Well, and before we get into the nitty gritty of the test and we walk through the assessment and everything, I want to step back a little bit and talk about the idea of fascination and why it's a valuable concept. Because you think about it, we want to generally be perceived by others to be useful, to be interesting, to be valuable, to be fun to be around. But this concept that we want to be fascinating to someone, that's a very specific term. And it's kind of a high bar. We were talking about setting the bar a second ago when we were off the podcast, and setting yourself apart as fascinating, that's a high bar to reach. You know, you think about the things that you would consider to be just super interesting, worthy of the moniker fascination, and that list has got to be very small. So why is it valuable that we be seen as fascinating in some way to customers or to colleagues? What's the value in that?
Well, I really think it comes down to a number of things. One is when you are really operating at your best, you fascinate people automatically. They even show the signs. It's like being in love or salivating over a good dinner. Your mind just kind of expands. And so there's actual proof that when you're fascinating people, that you actually have that same reaction internally in people's minds. You can attract and you focus differently. And when you're really talking to a patient, or when you are creating that environment for whether it's a presentation, a board, a paper, if you are not fascinating, you end up losing your audience in a very, 9 seconds now? That less than a goldfish if you cannot hold people's attention. So those people who are not listening to me on the phone right or on the podcast right now, pay attention, because there's a lot of good stuff in here that you need to learn about yourself. But people get bored very easily. They're going to turn down to their phone. They're going to check their text messages and their emails.
Well, and especially in a world where, to a certain extent, healthcare has been commoditized, and I think rightly so in a lot of ways. But one of the necessary downsides of that is that it's very easy for a patient or a colleague or a potential customer to see all doctors as basically interchangeable. And so they start looking at things online and saying, well, I need to go see someone for my sprained ankle. Let's look up orthopedists in my area. This guy's got some good reviews. Sure, I guess I'll go with that. But if we can find a way to stand out, to be fascinating to folks, then all of a sudden we have a cachet that really can be a significant value add to our business, in addition to being useful just from a personality standpoint.
It's so true. We went through changing our name, our practice name, about 2 years ago. So we were North Clinic before, and now we're Voyage Healthcare. And we went through the whole process of what makes us who we are. And even as you have an archetype, so does a business, so does your board, so does a group of people. So we actually take the test and we kind of look and we figure out who are we as a company, as a department, and everybody, or even as the clinics. We've got 5 clinics, and every clinic has a different archetype. So when you test, you kind of know what's happening. And that is something that the test doesn't tell you. You take that first one, that initial assessment, and you go, hey, that's great. But we can actually take it further and out much more. And so we actually went through the whole process of rebranding based on what we wanted as a group and who we were. And, you know, there's not many tests that will allow you to do that, but this one does.
Well, and a lot of people I can imagine are hearing this and thinking, well, that all sounds fine, but I'm kind of an introverted person, or I don't have a lot of really great stories. I haven't climbed any high mountains. I've never done any major traveling. I went to school and now I work, and I don't really have a lot of interest. I'm not an interesting person. Which, first of all, everyone out there, yes, you are. Okay. You are an interesting person. And so don't feel bad. If you suffer from imposter syndrome, you're just the same as everybody else, because I guarantee you that everybody else that is around you is feeling exactly the same way. But the thing that I thought was most interesting, one of the most useful and telling lines of Sally's book, How the World Sees You, was she said, the greatest value you add is to become more of yourself. I'm going to repeat that for everyone that's listening. So the greatest value you add is to become more of yourself. And I think that that's counterintuitive in a lot of ways. I think we're inclined to downplay some of our certain tendencies, or feel like we need to fit into a certain mold, or feel like we have to try to act a certain way and act in a way that is maybe different from what our natural personality traits and our natural advantages are. But what this research shows is that we need to be more of ourselves. We need to play up the fascination advantages or the character traits that we already have. So is that something that you've seen in your experience, that accentuating our own personality traits is a better way to go about it than trying to just manufacture new ones?
Oh, by far. When you look at when people test, or when I speak, the number one thing that I hear is, I wish I would have done this sooner. I wish I would have known this before I went into college. If you do not believe you are who you are, or you're trying to fit into what your parents taught you to be, what your family traits are, a lot of people get into the wrong thing and don't listen to who they truly are, who they want to be. So that's where it comes into, you know, be the best you. So when you're testing in the different advantages, and I'm an innovation person, so I came out high innovation. You do not want to put me in a room doing spreadsheets, right? So if my mom and dad told me that I was supposed to be an accountant, and I listened to them and I went into school to be an accountant, how happy do you think I would be in that job? I'm not going to be. Or if I'm dealing with people and I have a dormant of passion, this is going to be something that I have to kind of trigger and do. But I have to sit there and leverage my strengths to the best advantage. Always when you're the most authentic, that's when people listen to you. That's when people like you. That's when you're honest and truthful, and people just enjoy being around you because you're being your authentic self. And many of us kind of walk through life not being authentic at the beginning. We're who we think we should be or what we should do. I remember being told when I decided to become the boss instead of being a nurse that my grandmother was rolling over in her grave. And I was laughing at that going, no, I wasn't meant to be that. I was meant to be this. And the contributions you give, now, whether you take a fascinating assessment or, but be who you truly are and be authentic. But this gives you another insight into, if something doesn't feel right, it tells you how you can work with it.
Well, and there's research across a lot of domains to support this idea that we need to be who we are and that we need to be working on our strengths. So my favorite business books of all time, number one and number two, are both by a guy named Jim Collins. You may have read them, Good to Great, yes, and Built to Last. And those are tremendously important books. And so for all the listeners out there, if you haven't read those books, you need to buy a copy of those today and read them by the end of this month. Okay. No kidding. They are the two most important business books I think maybe ever written, Good to Great and Built to Last. But one of the arguments that Collins makes, according to his research, is he uses, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I think it bears repeating, that a company is like a bus, is how he uses the analogy, right? So in order to get the bus to where you're going, you need several things. You need to get the right people on the bus. You need to get the wrong people off the bus, and you need to get the right people in the right seats on the bus. And so what he's talking about is hiring good people, getting rid of people that are not performing well, and making sure the people that you have around are working in their strengths. So the guy who is the best at driving the bus, you don't need that guy to be changing the tires on the bus. The guy who's planning the team activity schedule doesn't need to be the gal who's helping organize the itinerary when you're getting there. You know, there's all these different roles that you can play. And getting people to where they're working in their strengths requires that you know what their strengths are. And I think that's a really great way that this particular tool can really help people. And that's what that research seems to show.
I always like to mention that there's a technical set. So all the physicians listening, anybody in healthcare right now, you've got a technical set. You went to school for that. You know what you're doing. You've read the books. You've done the work. But the thing that you have to work on is your art set. When you're working with people, when you're trying to figure things out, you can be the best physician in the world. You can be the best CEO. But if you have not worked on your art set or understand your art set, that's when things get a little tricky and a little dicey for people. And that goes back to what we were just talking about being authentic. You have to work in both. And the art set, this is how the world sees you, and you should know how the world sees you.
Absolutely. Well, so let's kind of start diving into that a little bit. I want to talk about the test itself and kind of walk people through the concept here. So give us the basic overview. So what are these? We've hinted around a couple of these concepts, the fascination advantages, the archetypes, the dormant advantage, things like that. So start us from the beginning. So what is it that we're trying to get to as we're doing the test or we're doing the assessment? What is the ultimate goal that we're trying to reach here?
Okay, so if you haven't taken the test, it's all of a 15-minute test. So we sure have a lot to talk about for a 15-minute assessment. The thing the test shows you, it's 28 questions. It takes a short amount of time. And at the end of this test, you will get a primary archetype and a secondary archetype. And that will show you really how the world sees you. But it goes much deeper than that. It also tests what you might have as a dormant advantage, and that what also can be kind of your blind spots that you get into also. So it's really this eye opener, and you really want to stay in the what we call the wellspring of your personality. And so we kind of look at it, wellspring and quicksand. So we want to stay in the wellspring, which means you're acting at your best. It's your best form of communication is when you fascinate people. That's when the world gets excited to be around you, because it's like you get energy, you get drive from being who you are. The quicksand, of course, is pretty much what it says. When you're not operating at your best and you are around people, you might not have the best energy or be promoting yourself in the best way.
So we do this assessment and it gives us two distinct fascination advantages out of the seven possible, right? And the combination of those two gives us our archetype. So what are those seven advantages and what do those entail? What does that actually mean for us?
Okay, so you can fall into innovation, passion, power, prestige, trust, mystique, and alert. So you've got a first one and a second one that shows up, and then it actually gives you your fascination advantage. It takes the test and it takes your primary and it takes your secondary advantage, and they combine it into 49 archetypes. So even though I know that you and I both have power, but your power is more primary, my innovation is more primary. So I'm in a different category than you are. In fact, if I'm the maverick leader, so I have innovation and power as my secondary. And you are the guardian, which is your power and trust. But you and I are going to connect really well based on our power, because it's our natural language. That's what that's about. It's how we talk. We're kind of strong personalities. We get stuff done. So anyway, this test really shows so much about how you're going to operate to your best of your ability.
So, well, let's walk through an example of one, and we can use mine if you like. So, all right. So I do this test. It's 28 questions. And by the way, I was impressed with how simple all these were. I mean, it's 28 questions, and I think you pick you rank order four choices out of each one or something. And it was, it's been a number of years since I did the test myself, but it's super easy. And I was surprised at how closely it pegged everything. Okay. So then you do this assessment, and then it gives you a primary advantage and a secondary advantage. And then the combination of those two tells you what your quote unquote archetype is. And then that is a, gives you a sort of a framework to describe how the world sees you. Okay. So now we have our own personal archetype. And so, so what's the next step? How do we actually start to make some use of it or start to understand what that means?
So there's a great report that Fascinate does that will walk you through it for the most part. However, it doesn't really teach you how. That's why you need advisors, because it doesn't really go into that next level. And because you can read this report and go, hey, it's great. But it's going to show you immediately you've got power, and then who you are. Basically, when you've got power, is you're confident, you're goal oriented, and you're decisive, right? And then it tells you how you're going to use it, and how, if you develop clear opinions and you're strong and you're going to lead a conversation. Imagine that you've got a podcast. Isn't that kind of funny that you'd have power as your first and lead in a podcast? So I think that that's it's pretty funny, but it's going to show you then when you're using your power, and it's going to tell you how when you use your trust. The interesting part is trust means you're going to build loyalty over time. So not only are you decisive and clear in your direction, but your secondary is that you're going to build loyalty. So, and you're going to be stable, dependable, and familiar with people. Are going to go, I like this person because I can feel good. And boy, if you're a physician, isn't that a nice thing to have, right? As somebody who's telling people, I will tell you, there's a lot of physicians who have power and trust. There are a lot of guardians in the medical field. So, and guess what? You probably all like each other and you know who you are when you're talking to each other. But that's how you're going to start using it. You're going to learn, hey, this is who I am. But then we're going to go deeper. The other thing that I would add into this is, as you learn your archetype, and we talk about the art set that you need to use, is 85% of your financial success is due to your personality and your ability to communicate, negotiate, and lead. And only 15% is on your technical knowledge. So that's a huge statistic. So if you, when we talk about that art set, because I can choose you as my physician, I can choose somebody else as my physician. So what's going to make me want to come back to you versus choose somebody else? Now, you're right. People can look it up in a book. But when you develop that art set, you know who you are and you operate as who you are going to be much more successful than somebody else down the road.
Okay. So I feel like that 85% statistic really should be a mind-blowing thing. But honestly, as I hear it, it just confirms everything that I've always sort of believed is that, and we hear, honestly, I think that we hear this a lot. It's almost maybe to the point of being cliche, at least I've heard it a lot of times in my medical training and since, is that if you look at what patients are looking for, they want three things, right? They want affability, they want availability, affability, and ability, right? So every patient that comes into your door assumes that you went to medical school, right? And that you didn't get your license from, you know, Kinko's or something. Right. And so they just naturally assume that because you went to medical school and you went through training, that you know what you're talking about and that you're decent at coming up with a diagnosis, and they don't know any better. They don't know that you're middle of the pack average physician versus the number one in your specialty versus the guy who finished dead last in medical school. They have no idea. And frankly, they don't care. They just want to make sure that they just assume a certain level of technical competence, and everything else is based on, do they like you? This happens all the time. I get patients that come to me from other docs, and I can't tell you the number of times that I'll ask, so why are you switching physicians? Oh, it wasn't a good fit. It just, you know, it didn't really get along. It just wasn't quite what I was looking for. It wasn't a personality match. You know, it's always that kind of thing. They just didn't quite seem to fit. And so I think if we can learn to work in our strengths a little bit more, then we'll be able to really bring those people back to us. And it's when we try to work in a personality that really doesn't fit us, or when we don't understand what our personality is, and and how to make maximum use of that, that we're, I think, missing out on some opportunities.
Well, and it's interesting because it's okay not to connect with all people. We somehow think that this is a problem in life, that we might not get along with everybody. But this is the beautiful part about the fascination system is when you know that you're clicking with somebody and like you feel like they're a long lost friend, they're probably one of the same archetypes you are, which is interesting. In this test, we also have a dormant. And so when you have a dormant, that means that's just not your natural ability. And what's interesting about that is when you're having to operate from your dormant, or let's say you've got a patient in the room and they are presenting with a mystique personality, and that's, you don't even have that in your archetype, right? So you're just not going to connect on the same level. It doesn't mean you're not going to be a good doctor. It doesn't mean you're not going to be a good person. It's just not going to have that, that fit that was there. And that's okay, because aren't there physicians and aren't there people who really are the right person for everybody else? And sometimes you just have to find it, and it's okay. But fascinate, when you get into that system, you really can start picking up what personality is in front of you and how to work with it. And so if you've got that patient and you say, hey, this is somebody that is kind of an alert kind of does this keeping things on schedule, keeping things on budget, they're worry warts. They're, you know, just they're higher anxiety than the average person that would come in with passion. So you're going to notice that this person, once you recognize that, you're going to be able to speak their language just a little bit different, to just tweak it, to get it more calm, to have a better fit. Doesn't mean that you're having to change, but your language and your communication is changing. And that's why we talk about that art set.
Okay. So as we're talking about applying this information, so now we've got our archetype. And so, like I said, for mine, it's the guardian. And so I'll just read a couple things off of my report that I received. This is years ago now, but how the world sees you. It says you exude a natural authority. You're composed. You express your opinions with a quiet, unwavering conviction. You have a strong reputation. You're a guardian because you're a loyal leader who protects your team. All right. So that gives me some language and some words that I can use to define what it is about myself that is valuable to other people, is how I can be someone who interacts with other people in a way that brings value to the world. And so that's very, very helpful. But now let's kind of think about this as though we're looking beyond just ourselves. Let's say I'm a team leader, or I own my own business and I've got a dozen employees that work for me, or I've got a group of peers that I'm on a committee with that I want to all work together, and we want to all do this together. So how can I start applying this more broadly to a larger group of people? Because not everyone's going to have the same advantage, right? I mean, so, you know, you're the maverick leader, I'm the guardian, but there's 15 people in a room, there may be 14 or 15 different archetypes. So how do we start to piece this all together as we're bringing this to our team?
When we do the fascinating assessment, that's number one, then we actually do a lot of work with teams. So what we do is we take your archetype and then we determine how you work best with, we would test the rest of your group, and we do what's called a heat map. And we put everybody on the heat map so that you can see how your team's doing. So out of those, do you have three people who have passion? Do you have four people who have trust? Are you out of balance? Do you have somebody on a full team that's, it's a well-rounded team? Because, for example, we're doing a innovation committee at work. And what's interesting about that is I'm not going to put some of the mystique people on. I want my innovation people on that committee. But I also know if I have too many innovation committee members, that's a little bit too much too, because we have what's called a double trouble. But what we actually do is we work with how to put your best teams together, what works, what doesn't work. We actually work with everybody. So let's say with your archetype, you were having trouble with Sally, and you decided that, hey, she's not the right fit for my team. Well, we had to figure out why that's not the right fit for your team, because you actually could be too strong for her. And so then when you're talking to Sally, you might need to back up a little bit and go, you know, let's have you come up with this. So we give you tools and techniques to be able to work with everybody on your team, because let's face it, you can't just keep turning over staff, right? If you don't have that many people, you have to learn to work with who you've got. And with that, then you bring out their best advantage and we figure out how to work with them, especially if you're a leader. So a secondary example would be that with my board, I realize now that I'm innovation, right? And I've got a lot of trust people and I got a lot of prestige. And when I talk to the people in my room, I am actually going to add in language to make them feel comfortable so that I get my point across. Otherwise, I can come across as not giving enough detail, not giving enough information for them. And then they look at me and I miss the message. So it's truly made me a better leader. In fact, I would tell you that since I did Fascinate, they just said, you're so much more sure of yourself. You really just seem much more comfortable. And I really didn't change anything about myself. I just learned how to speak the language so that they understood the concepts better.
Yeah, and I can see how it'd be valuable to have this concept of the heat map that you're talking about, where you have each person's archetype plotted on this chart to figure out, okay, do I have a well-rounded, balanced team? Because I could see if you have, for example, if you take the Guardians as an example, if you have a lot of people in the room that all have power as their primary advantage, well, power is the language of confidence, right? And so you have a lot of people that are really sure that they have the right answer all the time. I could see how you have not enough balance and you end up with a lot of people that have very definite ideas and they're sure they're right. And then they end up kind of clashing. And so you don't have that balance to have people come in and go, okay, well, have you considered this idea? Have you considered this? And sort of tempering that confidence with some eye for detail or with some innovative concepts or some other things like that. So I could definitely see how that would be valuable as well.
It's funny you say that because we call it your double trouble. And then even in a group, so if you had a group that had too much power, they'd be dominant, overbearing, and dogmatic. And they're just not going anywhere. And they're going to walk out really frustrated. Like that is, you know, we've clashed at this. And I mean, we've all seen it, right? So you know that that's really what's happening when there's too much power in the room. The one thing is I really do like people to really look at what we call as their double troubles. And that's actually in the innovation advantages too. So not only do we tell you what your primary is, your secondary, but we talk about what happens when you get out of sync with your own personality. And that happens. And what I find, and this is kind of a sad thing, because most people want to own their double trouble versus really work in the strength of their personality. And everybody I know, when I'm doing a talk or even in these one-on-one coaching sessions I have with people, they said, yep, that's me. When I get out of sync, I get out of sorts, I get in an argument, I'm in my double trouble. And then they want to talk about that, where it's like, no, let's develop your strengths here. Because we already know what's behind the curtain.
One of the things that we've referenced a couple times now is the dormant advantage. What does that mean? And how do we overcome that?
Okay, well, that is a great, great question. So your dormant is going to be where you do not operate at your best. So my dormant is mystique. Actually, no, it's not. It's alert. I'm sorry. I forgot what it was for a second. And that means when I'm dealing with a big project, I might not get as worked up as everybody else. Like I'm like, this is going to work out. This is going to be great. And they're like, what do you mean this is going to be great? You know, we're going to lose money on this. And I'm like, no, we're going to be fine. So it kind of works to my advantage in some ways, but sometimes I should do the alert button. Somebody who is, I believe that your dormant is passion.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So what that tells me is that you're really not going to plan the next office party. That, you know, you might like people, but you're really not going to go to the lengths to do some things that are going to get everybody together. But that's not saying you won't. It just says that's just not your cup of tea when you have that. When you think about passion, you think about a people person. And by the way, the one thing that I have forgotten to say about this whole thing is we're all of these archetypes. It's not that we, you know, we are bits and pieces of all of them. But again, you're dormant is tough. But the thing is if somebody comes to you and says, you know, can you plan the party? You will. So this is how you're going to get out of it. But it's just not the thing you want to do. I sometimes worry so many times about people's double troubles because it really creates a blind spot. Their dormant is kind of more their blind spot. So it might be something that we think we're really good at, but we're not. It's just not our natural form of communication.
Well, and that's important because it's the thing that's going to drain energy out of us. I mean, like you said, we can, especially as physicians and as healthcare professionals, we tend to be very eager to help. And so our natural tendency is if someone asks us to do something, our natural tendency is to say, yeah, absolutely. I can totally do that. And I think we're not very good at saying no sometimes. And so we end up getting not bullied, but maybe we get guilted. And a lot of that I think is self-guilted into doing things that don't really speak to our strengths. So to your example, I can't even think of a better example. That is the perfect example. The idea of planning an outing for a team. I start sweating immediately. I'm just thinking, oh, please don't let anyone hear this because they might suggest it. And I might accidentally say yes. So I remember a few years ago, I was working at a different facility and I had my whole team do this assessment. And I remember, you know, just working with people's different strengths. It was fascinating to learn some of these different things from people. And I tell you what, one of the things that I had previously told everybody before we did this, you know, this was, you know, months even before I even thought about doing this for everybody, is I wanted to start, I'd come onto this team that had had a leader that was really, frankly, just toxic and just a very bad influence. And just the morale was just so bad. And so when I first got there, I instituted a few different things to try to start getting the team on a better track and getting everyone interacting more and start building some culture and morale. And one of the things that I did very first off is identify people that were good at planning events, because I'll go and I'll have a great time and I'll be the life of the party and I'll have all kinds of fun mingling with people. And if it's up to me to plan it, it will not happen. And if it does happen, it'll be lame. So first thing I identified is a chief culture officer and said, look, you need to be the person to plan this. And she was so excited. And this, you know, she got a couple of other people to help her out and they had a great time planning it, but that was her strength. It was what she really, really enjoyed. And that was perfect. And so I think recognizing what we're not strongest at is, I don't know if it's as important, but it's got to be right up there with knowing what our greatest strength is. Because if we're spending a lot of our time in the things that we're not strongest at, and that is energy draining for us, then it takes away from our ability to work in our strengths from a time perspective. And it limits the mental energy and the emotional capital that we have that's available to devote to those. So we end up just completely missing a bunch of opportunities because we're just not working in the things we're strongest at.
Well, and one of the things that I would say to all physicians that are working, if you're the one that's in the office at 7:30 every night trying to get out and you see the other person walking out the door at 5 o'clock, and you're wondering, you both, you know, had close to the same patients a day, you know, it really talks to back to your, I like to say, yes, I like to do this. But what is becoming at the cost of your life, your family, your, you know, just, we always talk about work-life balance, which, you know, this is just, it's truly not, there's no work-life balance, but the things that we do to ourselves when we are in our quicksand really does drain our energy. And wouldn't it be a wonderful world if we focused on those strengths and get out and live our life, live our best life, than spending all the time at the office? And I'm a workaholic by nature. So, you know, like pot, kettle, in addition. So I have my own issues, but I really try to help other people get beyond that for themselves.
Can these concepts be applied outside of the workplace? Can they be applied with family, with friends, with community groups, organizations, things like that?
Oh, by far. It's interesting. You will always be attracted to your other archetypes. So when in the office, somebody comes in and says, oh man, I really like Judy. And I always have to laugh because they're the same archetype. Or after somebody's been here for a while and I've tested them, I used to pre-test, but I don't do that anymore because people answer the way they think you want. So if you're taking the test, we can't see your answers. Number one, we just get your archetype. So really, really take the assessment honestly, because then we can really help you. But it is so funny. I'll ask somebody, so, you know, have you met anybody that you just really hit it off here? And sure enough, they will list the person automatically who is their fellow archetype. It is without fail. I've watched this over the last 10 years. You can't even make it up. But it's so you outside, even your friends, you're going to surround yourself with people who are a lot like you. You're going to just, your best friends are probably going to have a lot of that energy. And the reason families don't get along is because a lot of them aren't your archetype. So it's almost hysterically funny. But I think it's one of the things I'll say about archetypes in your family is my person who will be succeeding me one day, her archetype, she's in the trust and mystique area. And I finally got my dad after 10 years to take the test. Well, my dad and her are the same. So I picked my dad to replace me. Now that's hysterically funny. It's pretty funky that I have been like, this is the person who I have trusted, I have enjoyed, and here she was the same archetype as my dad. Now, how do you even pick that out? You know?
That's awesome. I love that. Well, Joanne, I think this has been really fascinating, again, to use the term conversation. So I appreciate you coming on today. If people want to learn more about all this stuff, or they want to connect to you or find out more about how they can apply this to their team, like I said, I've taken my entire team through this at multiple places that I've worked, and it has been phenomenally useful each time. So if people are interested in learning more or connecting to you, how can they connect to you?
They can email me at stadnick@min.net, which is stadnick@min.net, or call me at 612-817-0870. Again, 612-817-0870 sounds like an ad. But anyway, I really believe that healthy cultures at work make the world a better place to work in. I mean, that is how life has to be because we spend so much time there.
100%. And this is exactly why I spend so many episodes on culture, on team development, on leading others, on, you know, finding the right balance in the workplace, because this matters so much. I mean, we talked in several of the first episodes that we had on the podcast last year, we talked about the fact that at the end of the day, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
For lunch. I say for lunch.
I was going to say, I gotta be up early. So I say breakfast, but it's true, right? I mean, and so,
yep.
And so you can have the best strategy, the best plans. And if you don't have the right team and you don't have the morale built up, you know, and you don't have people working in their strengths, it just is not going to work. And this assessment is great. It's a great way to get started and helping people. Well, for anyone out there, if you'd like to take the Fascination Advantage assessment, you can certainly find it online, but you can link to it very easily at www.thescopeofpractice.com/fascinate. And that'll take you to the assessment, and then contact someone like Joanne to go through it. It'll give you a really detailed report that you can read on your own. But if you'd like to learn more and figure out how to apply it more broadly and take your team through it, you know, folks like Joanne are great at that. And like I said, I've taken my entire team through this at multiple places that I've worked, and it is super useful. And when it comes to things like personality tests or like Myers-Briggs and strength finders and things like that, this I think is frankly the best one out there. So I'll have the link in the podcast description so you can go take that test and try it out for yourself and see what you think about it. I think you will be absolutely amazed at how it changes the way that you communicate and the way that you apply your strengths in a more profound way. Well, this has been a great conversation. I want to say thank you again to our guests. This is Joanne Stadnick. Make sure you click the links in the podcast description. You can go to the show notes to find ways to connect with her and learn more about how to find your fascination advantage. Joanne, thanks again for coming to us today on the Scope of Practice podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You take care.
Wasn't that interesting? You know, the first time I read the research behind this 7 years ago, I was a bit skeptical at first. But having seen the fascination advantage assessment in action multiple times, I am a big believer. Like I said before, I've actually bought this for my entire team at more than one place that I've worked at. This is an incredibly useful tool. So if you want to try it out for yourself, you can get it at www.thescopeofpractice.com/fascinate, and that'll take you right to the place where you can get the test. I'm telling you, this is such a cool tool to use. It only takes about 15 minutes to complete. The report that you'll get with it is also incredibly helpful. So don't be surprised if you try this out and then you get so hooked that you start recommending it to your whole team as well. Check it out at thescopeofpractice.com/fascinate or just click the link in the podcast description. Thanks so much for joining me on the Scope of Practice podcast today. You can also find all those resources in the show notes at www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode66. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode66, or just click the links in the podcast description. Thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast at www.thescopeofpractice.com.
Before we end, don't forget to go hang out with my friend, Dr. Erin Wiseman, over at her podcast, Dr. Me First, on your favorite podcast app, or learn more about how to connect with the Queen of SaaS by heading to drpodcastnetwork.com/Dr. Me First.